Welcome back to another week of the AMB Podcast. It's your boy, Young Tamarack, and we're coming off the dribble this week. I'm here with some good people because my people are never not good. Let them know what it is, Stair.
Yo, what up? It's your boy, Stair, a.k.a. the Finesse Fella, a.k.a. Papa Stair, a.k.a. the big homie by the stairs, and we back, so we here, so let's do it, you know?
And like super I said, excited for this week. Yes. Like I said, super excited. We're here with some good people because our people are never not good. And this week, we low-key, not even low-key, we got like a basketball legend in our area in the building right now. Mm-hmm. We got Jamal Oswer in the building. Go ahead, give it up for Jamal.
Appreciate y'all, man. Appreciate y'all. I love what y'all doing here, man.
Hey, man, thank you so much. Thank you so much, man. And like, I know myself and Alistair, we've watched you do some amazing things on the court. So it's really dope to actually have you on this podcast to kind of just talk a little bit about, like, you know, that whole basketball pedigree that, you know, that you come from. So before we get too deep into the basketball talk, as always, we check in with everybody to see how everybody's been. So Jamal, since you like 6 hours ahead, what's going on with you? How you been, man?
Oh, man, it's been a calm day. We just found out we qualified for the playoffs out here. This is my third time in my career, in a seven-year career that I've qualified for the playoffs and with a team that they didn't think that was going to make. We were picked last, actually, in the standings, and right now we're standing at fourth. So it's been a pretty good year. I'm with my son. Man, that has changed my life completely, seeing him grow up. And I'm currently in the most difficult time in my life, playing ball overseas during this pandemic. You know, you got to imagine not being able to do anything, stuck in a house, you know, on a schedule that really pretty much doesn't change. 6 days a week, you're playing basketball. So, man, it's just been kind of tough, you know, with the family over here. Kind of feels like you've been in jail, but, you know, I give everything to God, you know, for us to be here alive, smiling when a lot of people can't be the same. You know, we just thank him and, you know, we're just happy to be here.
Hey, and I'm sorry, what country are you in again?
I'm in Italy right now, man. I live in Rome. Well, we live in Rome. Excuse me.
Damn, that's kind of lit.
That's so crazy.
This is my second year in Rome, and I played in Italy for the last 5 years.
Damn. Nah, that's lit as hell. That's what's up. And you're like one of like the better like European countries too. Well, I mean, maybe not like race relations wise, but like just like I feel like overall in comparison to some of the other places. So that's definitely dope. Alistair, what about you though, man? What you been up to? How things been?
It was a good week for me. I can't lie. Got my vaccine shot, the first round of it. My arm's a little sore. It was cool. My mom had successful surgery, so she's back and on the mend. What else? I'm just cooling, you know. The stimmy hit. I was a little late. I didn't get to enjoy all the stimulus memes like everybody else. So it came
as long as Joe got you with your bread, that's cool.
That's why I was like, yo, Joe!
Did yours get mailed or did you get the direct deposit?
I got direct deposit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so when it, because I wasn't ready for it. So I was like, damn, my stimmy's late. I want to go get something to eat. I was like, oh, shit, let me check my account real quick. Oh, this stimmy's in here. But yeah, it was a good week for me. I can't lie. Right now, Nami's in New York. So I'm just cooling in the crib, me and Kayla. Yeah, that's pretty much it. How about you, co-host?
You know me, man. I live a pretty boring life, bro. So I ain't really getting into too much. The most exciting thing that I would say that happened is that we went to the DMB Cypher that took place yesterday, hosted by Steve Wells or Mules, however you want to pronounce his name. Technically, it's Wells. But yeah, man, he put together a dope cypher. Obviously, you know, Nate Joel, King P was out there. There were a few other artists that I hadn't heard that were pretty dope. Black Rose was out there, too. But it was a pretty good vibe. There was like random people pulling up. So it's just dope to see somebody trying to, and he's not even like from here, but him just trying to cultivate like a culture, in terms of like music in this area. So that was pretty dope. Other than that, man, just, you know, trying to find a way to blow Joe's good money, that he gave to us. So yeah, man, I've been cool and I'm getting ready to go on a couple of trips, about to go to Atlanta, about to go to LA. So, just been prepping for that, man. Trying to get my gear right so I can look good in the sun. And yeah, that's pretty much it, man.
I've been tired this summer, man.
Oh yeah. We're not holding back. Good. Hopefully I can get the vaccine too, pretty soon. Cause I think at a certain point, it's only going to be Johnson & Johnson left. I don't really know if I want that Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Yeah, I had that.
Yeah, I heard they only got Pfizer's good and I heard Moderna's good, but Johnson & Johnson, like what, 84% or something like that, I heard.
Yeah. Which, I mean, yeah, it's a B and it's passing. Like if we was in school and you got like an 84, you'd be like, damn, all right, that's cool. But like when it comes to like putting like a shot in your body that's supposed to like prevent you from like getting the disease that can kill you, I feel a little different.
Won't go with the higher. Yeah.
Right. It's like if a doctor would be like, yeah, man, I got B's in school. And the doctor's like, yeah, I got A's. I mean, so like, who you want to treat you? I mean, well, the nigga who got the 94%, you know what I mean? Like, so. But other than that, like I said, I've been good though, man. I can't complain. I'm living. I'm blessed. But yeah, I guess without further.
We hoop.
Oh, we did hoop. We did hoop. And
not on your level. No, don't worry. You ain't got nothing to worry about. But like, we was out there, you know, stretching the legs. Felt good to be outside. I have a hoop.
Yeah, my body's not made to hoop, bro.
You said what?
So my body's not made to hoop, bro.
Because you're turning yourself into a boulder, Bryce, with your lifting. You're just
The thing is, bro, people, I'm not even like that. I don't weigh a whole bunch or anything like that. I weigh like 170.
Build your muscles. Richard James taught me that one.
Who?
Richard James. The GOAT.
He taught you a way. Say that again.
It's the way you build your muscles. Like, if you build them to just be like strong, you're just gonna be strong. That's it. You're not gonna be mobile and like agile and like shifty and shit like that.
I'm always gonna be shifty, bro. I'm African.
Okay, Bryce.
That's never going away, bro.
Where you from?
Ghana.
West Africa. All right. Yeah, I like that. West Africa. Yeah.
So shifty boys all day. Terrible at shooting, though. Terrible at shooting. But I take it to the cup and blow a layup for sure. I take it to the cup and blow a layup. Alistair, man, to kind of get us started. Well, I don't know. Do you want to just jump straight into it, or do you have a question to pose for the group?
I mean, it's a light one because it's recent news. Like, it literally just broke yesterday. The Nets are they became the Monstars. I just wanted everyone's quick take on that. LaMarcus Aldridge is now going to be a Brooklyn Net, along with Blake Griffin and KD and Kyrie and Harden. So it's like, are we just going to simulate the rest of the season? Or is there still like a reason to play?
Man, look, I'm a fan of the Nets. So I need them to go ahead and bring that home. I don't really want to see LeBron in the championship. I know LeBron, blah, 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 blah. He won in a COVID bubble season. I don't really count that championship, but so I'm glad to see KD coming back with one. My man Kai, you know, and James Harden, who really, really deserves one. Man, I'm happy to see it. That's all. They don't really need all this added talent, to be honest. But you know, might as well make it quick. I guess this is ensures that the series will be over in four, in my opinion.
Okay. I was telling Bryce yesterday when the news broke, I was like, if Bron can steal two games. Just two.
It ain't.
He has a shot of winning it.
The crazy thing is he could do it.
He could do it.
He could do it. But nah.
That boy gonna get he gonna get slapped around out there, man. Yeah. I'm just being honest. He gonna be 4-10 in championships.
Yeah. It's too much firepower, bro. It's too much.
You can go to anybody down the stretch. You can't double nobody. You know, you go inside the LaMarcus, you can go outside the James, the Kyrie, it's just too much. And they all can shoot. It's not even like you can just dare them to shoot. They all can shoot. And they all can end the game. You know what I mean? So it's just physics telling you that the game, you know, this season is pretty much decided, in my opinion, man.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's just it speaks to the greatness of LeBron. For people to have to feel like, all right, well, like, you know, let me just like jump on like this bandwagon and like get together with this squad so we can bring a championship. Cause we already know who we're gonna have to face when we get there. What can we do to make sure the odds are insurmountable in our favor against LeBron James? And I feel like that's what the Nets are pretty much done. Granted, I do feel you on the James Harden thing. I think he should get a championship, but man, I don't know. I don't know if I like what I'm seeing. I mean, it's just Blake Griffin ain't dunking like 2 years. Now he dunking all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. James Harden had a fat suit on, and then for some reason he was in shape after like a week of hooping, which was crazy to me. So like I don't know. I don't know if I like the fugaziness or the facades that everybody's putting on to get to the championship.
Look, man, we're in an era where the players control their destinies, they control their careers. And I actually, you know, as mad as I was 6-7 years ago, however long my LeBron decided to go to Miami, I'm happy to see it now, because as black men, like, we get to decide what we get to do, and we're not going to be villains anymore. Because you look at, you know, 10 years ago, if you talk about, I wanted to trade, they'd probably out you in the league. You know, they wouldn't, you know, you look at the NFL, like that's not a thing. You know what I mean? It's not a thing in any other kind of major sports, but the NBA is, you know, very progressive and progressive kind of sport, you know, for them to be able to do that and control their own careers. I'm happy about it, man. I'm just really happy to see it.
Nah, yeah, it's super dope. But I mean, again, hopefully my man LeBron, I need him to just get one more ship so that we can really solidify the goatness that is LeBron. It's looking real Memphis Bleak right now.
Let me when you say goat, what you mean by goat for LeBron? Like, you think he's the best ever?
I think if LeBron were to pull off another championship, yeah, like if you combine in terms of what he's done outside of basketball, what he's done within the game, I just couldn't really see it. I couldn't really see it any other way. But I really do think it's dependent on that additional championship. Because what LeBron has, he has what, four now? Three?
Four. Well, three. Four, three, right. Three. And he has one with a – he has two with an asterisk. But I'll give you that. He got two with an asterisk. But that's fine. I'll let him get his
– Wait, what's the other one with the asterisk? Okay. Yeah. Look, man, you can only play with the circumstances that are provided to you, bro. You know what I mean?
That's a fact.
Yeah, I'm sure if we won a championship in a bubble, you'd be like, man, we won it. Like, ain't nobody saying
it. I'm taking it for sure. But what I will say about LeBron, and I'm so glad you said it. The one thing, some would say I'm a LeBron hater, but I'm not here to go back and forth about that.
Sounds like you're about to slander my man.
No, but what I will say, though, what he is able to do off the court for people like us, man, honestly, there's been no athlete or celebrity who's ever done more than LeBron, you know what I mean? So, like, that's what I'll give to him. Like, off the court, he is the GOAT, you know, when it comes to just major league sport. But on the court, he's, you know, he's Mount Rushmore, but he's number four, in my opinion. You got Michael. Well, I would honestly say Kobe, rest in peace, but Michael, Kobe, and Olajuwon and Bron.
I mean, I feel like there's no really like super wrong way to answer that question. As long as you include, I would say the right people. As long as you're not out here like, I don't know, putting like Larry Bird in your top five.
Larry Bird, yeah. Barkley.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel it. But to shift gears, some might even say that you were part of like a Monstar squad at one point, right? Playing at Springbrook, the low key again basketball powerhouse in Montgomery County, man. I personally, as somebody who like stood on the sidelines and watched like the games, it was just like, damn, these niggas just like they dunking in games, like they're wilding out. Like, tell us about like that whole experience and like in being at like Springbrook. Did you know it was a basketball powerhouse before you got there, or was it something that had like developed over time? Or
hold on, I gotta jog that part of my memory. How long ago was that?
Ages.
Yeah, man. But you know what? When I was in middle school, growing up in an African household, you know, basketball was literally never number one. You know, we were taught to do other things, you know, and basketball was always a punishment whenever anything came up, you know. So I wasn't really so invested. Even I didn't play basketball in my seventh grade year, but my eighth grade year, I ended up making a team. I didn't play at all. Some will actually say I really wasn't. I sucked. Like, if you ask my friends now, they'd be like, oh, Jamal sucked in eighth grade. Jamal sucked in seventh grade. You know what I mean? That's what they'll tell you. But, when I told my high school coach, Mr. Arkett, I never forget him. He worked at Sherwood now. I was like, yo, I'm going to Springbrook. He was like, oh, you going to Springbrook? You'll never make the team in Springbrook. You know, damn. And from then on, it was like, you know, I don't know what clicked in me. You know what I mean? I went to go play Summer League JV. I made the team that year. Then, you know, from then on, like, I was like, I killed that Summer League. I killed my freshman year. My sophomore year, I was on varsity. And even then, I was still, like, you know, pretty – brain when it came to what was going on around me. Like, what was, I knew what Springbrook was, I knew what Paint Branch was and Blake was, but I didn't know about, you know, the Mathas, the, you know, WCAC conference. Then you had the PG County side of things. You know, I was still so stuck on Montgomery County. But then I, you know, that my sophomore year, you know, we were pretty decent. I played with Dave Brewster, Dave East, you know, no, excuse me, Dave East was the year before me. I was a freshman, but I got moved up for the playoffs. So I played with him that freshman year. But my sophomore year, we had CJ, who led the charge as a junior, I believe. Yeah, he was a junior. They didn't make it then. Then junior year, it all started when they brought in Jeremy Williams and Munda Williams from DeMatha. We got Brandon Davis from Wheaton. We got Zaire Hurst.
They went to the math at first?
Yeah, Jeremy went in. They went to the math at first. Yeah. So then, like, I don't know what it was, but everybody wanted to come to Springbrook. And then that was all she wrote, man. That junior year was crazy. We went 25-2. We played Thomas Stone. And, man, and honestly, you know, people don't really talk about him much. You know, he stopped playing ball, but C.J. Gardner was like, he was a god in high school. He was a god in college, but people don't really know what he was in high school, man. In high school, that kid could, like, you know, the only word that really fit him was electrifying. You know what I mean? That guy was 5'10", but, you know, he
dunking played on like niggas, bro.
I'm telling you, man, it was crazy. He was just, you know, the crazy thing about him, he never worked out, man. Like, you know, something, you know, when you look at a basketball player, you think that, you know, you put, man, you think you put everything into the game. Man, every summer, he's just doing him, you know what I mean? Doing music, chilling, vibing, you know what I mean? But when it's time to play, oh my God, you would want nobody else by your side but him. So, you know, he led that charge my junior year, his senior year. I remember, I'll never forget, we were down by 18 in the third quarter. And I mean, me and Jeremy were like, man, we got our senior year, man. We ain't really tripping about this. Like, we did. You feel me? Like, no, that was really a conversation we had in the backcourt when we was down 18. And then Munda went off for 16 in the second half. We ended up winning that game 61-57. That's a score I will never forget. And then my senior year, me and, you know, the Willows is what we call it, but that's where Jeremy Williams lives. And, you know, we were all there, you know, we were just chilling. CJ was going to South Alabama. Munda was going to Pfeiffer, and we were me and Jeremy were like, we're going to be better next year. And they were like, man, how y'all going to be better, blah, blah, blah. Senior year came, you know, we went 27-0. We went to double OT with Walbrook in the state semifinal. We beat Wise in the championship, and man, ranks number 2 in the post. We were doing things that year we never thought we could do, man. Like, you know, right. You lose CJ, you lose Munda, it's like, you know, theoretically, you're supposed to get worse, you know, mm-hmm. But so many people stepped up, man. Brandon Davis, we brought in Zaire Hurst, we brought in Deshaun Walker from Kennedy. You know, these players are D1 players, you know what I mean? They went D1, you know what I mean? Chris Carter, we had 5 seniors, man. It was crazy, man. And a lot of stuff went on that year that people really don't know. But for us to really have gotten through that and to win a second chip was just crazy. You know, 27-0, like the only team in front of us in the post was Montrose. We were better than the Masters. We were better than, well, on paper, we were, you know, by the standings, we were better than McNamara and all these teams that were, you know, covered around the way, you know. So, man, that was an amazing year, man. Amazing year.
I was actually at Montrose when Deshaun tried out, and they were like, he was too raw.
Really?
Yeah. I remember that. He was too raw. I remember that practice because he was some light-skinned dude pulled up, and I was like, yo, who is this nigga? I'm a bench warmer. I'm like, yo, all these niggas getting recruited. I ain't getting no PT. I got another nigga I got to compete with. That's crazy. But
what they didn't know is Sean was raw, though. Sean was raw, but a little too raw. But he played every game like he was on the street.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Going through the Montrose drills. We got catch the ball and triple threat, sweep through, a hard dribble attack. Like, it didn't look as clean as it should have. So in a tryout, it's like, eh. Not really gonna bring you on, but yeah, that's crazy.
Damn, nah, that's really crazy though. So like, it basically sounds like at one point, like a flip kind of, like I said, a switch kind of just like flipped, and everybody was like, all right, let's like flood to like Springbrook and like let's like, I guess, find a way to win championships. But I mean, I also feel like one of the big things about like Montgomery County basketball is like size, right? In comparison to like a school like DeMatha or like Paul the Sixth or whatever, like, but any of those teams, like, they end up having like some kids that are like almost 7 foot, like 6'9", 6'10". But I feel like there was like a lack of size in Montgomery County. But like, again, with like y'all at Springbrook, y'all managed to like find guys with size. Like, where were you guys finding these? Like, is it just like a Hoopers network where y'all like, all right, like this thing is 6'9", like let's hit him up, let's get him to come down there, bro?
Well, you know what, man, I'll say this. Coach Myers, who's the head coach right now at Springbrook, he was the assistant when I was there, but we always consider him, you know, the man behind the man who got it done. You know, he was the one calling the plays. He was the one in the gym in the summer. You know, it wasn't really Kroll, which I do give credit to Kroll for even being at the helm of all of this. But Myers did his job. He did his job. You know, he did his job as a coach. He, you know, he went out there. I don't want to say recruited because, you know, that first and foremost, that's illegal. And he did not recruit but he made Springbok basketball appealing, appetizing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like we were the, like, well, Blake actually had the nice Nike gear too, but you know, yeah, they the first that came through with the, you know, when they first had the tight jerseys, with
the dry fit jerseys. Yeah.
Came through first with that. But Myers before that, I mean, he just made it appealing. You know, he was kind of the coach. I just remember, like, you really couldn't get in the gym in Montgomery County in the summertime unless you was coming to Springbrook. You know what I mean? He committed to his players. Mm-hmm. You know, he committed to working, you know, and trying to get you above and beyond, you know, where you were at that moment. You know what I mean? So I think he just made it appealing. That's why everybody wanted to come in. Nobody, you know, the better side of things was you was coming to a public school that played like a private school, but you didn't have to pay the money for a private school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you really can't beat that.
What was your recruiting process like? And why'd you pick LIU?
Man, this is a crazy story, man. So when I played in the state semifinals my senior year, they had just told me I made first team all met. And at that point I was shocked. But then I had heard that John Thompson from Georgia should go see Roscoe Smith. I had 27-14 in the state semifinal. And I have never forget, I had that voice enough for about 2 months, bro. He called me, he was like, yo. Well, he ain't say yo, but he's like, hey Jamal, this is John Thompson from Georgetown. I just want to let you know that I came here to see Roscoe Smith, but man, you blew me away with, you know, how you play, your talent, your poise, blah, blah, blah. You know, talking like that. He was like, I want to bring you on campus as soon as possible.
Damn.
So you can imagine, just a kid from Montgomery County. I live in Burtonsville, you know what I mean? The mid-majors were the thing, but it wasn't really, you know, high major. Like, you're talking Big East. Like, when the Big East was really the Big East, you feel me? Like, I'm going on a visit to Georgetown. So I went on a visit to Georgetown. After I went on a visit to Georgetown, I went to Xavier. That's in Ohio. But they had just made a coaching change with Chris Mack was the coach. I think Chris Mack is over at Louisville now. But he was the coach then, and they wanted me as well. So I went on those two visits. I went on a visit to Ryder. I went on a visit to Mount St. Mary's and LIU. I used all my five, man. I was about to, you know, I'll tell any high school.
Wait, you only get five?
You only get five. Wait.
You're only legally supposed to get five.
Yeah, there you go.
Why is there a cap? I just pulled up. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the NCAA is crazy. You know, we know that. But
he's trying to block niggas from shining, dog. That's all that sounds like to me.
I'm telling you.
That's crazy.
I'm telling you. So when I went on the visit there, I played at Georgetown. I played over at Xavier. It was good. You know, there were a lot of it wasn't no full offer. They wanted to, at that point, they were telling me that if you go to prep school, we're going to sign you on the spot. And at that time, I had a college girlfriend. She was 1 year ahead of me. So it was like, I'm tired of being a boy. I want to go to college. I can't go to prep school. After that, I visited LIU, I visited Ryder. Honestly, bro, LIU was one of my favorite visits. Like, you know, like LIU from when we went there, but as a high school senior, and I went there and I saw the talent that was in that building, and I saw, like, I went to the Vina Lounge, they had a party at the Vina Lounge, they had a probate, they had so many dorms. I'm like, yo, the only thing I did not like about LIU visit. The only thing was going to Conley, and I slept in, remember Kyle Johnson, they gave me their room, and their bathroom was terrible. Like, honestly, I tell them that to this day. I still talk to Kyle, I still talk to Dick Tron. I'm like, yo, your bathroom was terrible. That was the only reason I wasn't coming to LIU. And I told Ferry, I was like, yo, yeah, that, for real. I told the coach at the time, Jim Ferry, I was like, yo, I'm not, the only way I would consider LIU is if Xavier and Georgetown are off. I told him straight like that at Juniors for our last meeting. You know, I gotta be honest. And he understood. He was like, yeah, he was like, yeah. But he was like, that's fine. He was like, that's fine. But here's the papers. Just let me know if you want to come in. So.
Damn, that's crazy.
At that time,
that's like telling a girl, like, yo, I fuck with you. But like, if these other two Jones, like, if they fuck with me, like, I'm going to have to get at you later, shorty. Like, yeah. Damn. But he took it. He was like, yeah, you'll be back.
He was confident, too, when he handed me those papers. So I went there. After that, I went on a visit to Mount St. Mary's. That was my favorite visit because. For reasons unexplained that need to stay unexplained, but Mount St. Mary's, and my girlfriend was coming back to She was coming back to Maryland. She just went to school in Florida. She was coming back to Maryland. She was going to University of Maryland. I'm like, the best thing I could do is go to Mount. So at that point, everybody kept calling me. It was around prom time. And I was like, you know what? I decided I'm going to Mount St. Mary's. I'm not taking any more calls. And I'm calling that coach in the morning after prom, and I'm going to go there. So the morning of the prom, we wake up in the hotel room. I get like 10 voicemails from my AU coach. He's like, answer your phone, dumbass. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I listen to all the voicemails. Well, it's Milan Brown, the head coach of Mount St. Mary's. He's like, look, man, you took too long. We're calling you. We want to know what your decision was, but we had to give you a scholarship away. Man, when I tell you my heart dropped, because at that point, every other school, St. Bonaventure was gone, Wider was gone. Well, I had called at the time to see them. They were gone. The only school left was LIU. And I went to LIU. I just chose LIU. That was the only choice I had.
Damn.
Shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah,
your career
man.
Might have been different if you went to Mount St. Mary's, though.
And you know, it's no coincidence. It's just so crazy how things happen, man. And you know, I wanted to be home, but it took me to New York. But it definitely would have been different because Milan Brown left 1 year after that. Okay. My freshman year, he left. He went to Holy Cross. And then after that, Mount wasn't, you know, the Mount no more. They had just won the NEC, though. They had just won the NEC the year before, but, you know.
All right, so how'd you end up convincing CJ to leave South Alabama to come to LIU?
So I didn't really do the convincing, man. Like, CJ was already transferring from South Alabama because he didn't really like it. The coach wasn't really messing with him down there.
Nigga, it's so South Alabama.
Right, exactly. But, you know, they were good, man. They had some grown men over there. But, you know, CJ was being 5'10". He just really didn't really fit in that conference. So he was already in the transfer portal. And then Jim Ferry, the head coach at LIU at the time, hit me up. I just, after I signed, he was like, yo. He was like, I see your boy from CJ's leaving. I'm like, yeah, he's not really happy at South Alabama. He was like, all right, well, I'm going to need you to do this for me. Jim Ferry was an Italian through and through. So everything is orders. It's not asking you to do anything. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Like calling on. You know what I mean? Like, so he was like, I'm going to need you to do these things for me. He was like, I need you to set up an open run. I don't care what gym it's at. Just make sure I can sit down. I'm comfortable. Make sure CJ's there and I want to see how he can play. This is how he's talking to me. I've just met him one time, but this is how he's talking to me. And anybody who could talk to me would just meet me one time. It's just like, all right, I'm going to just do what he wants. You know what I mean? This is the kind of coach he is. I'm going to just do what he wants. So I set it up. We had like a 5-on-5 in East County Rec Center. And CJ came through and CJ did what CJ does. And they signed him on the spot. You know, it was like, we want you. And, you know, CJ had to sit out a year. So they knew what they were doing, especially with the fact that Jay Tona was a senior point guard. They brought CJ in to kind of learn from him and take whatever knowledge he can to prep him for the next year. So that's what happened.
Damn. So you can just like set up at like an open run and like niggas just pull
up. But none of this is legal. None of this.
Okay.
Is legal.
All right. There we go. There we go. There we go. All right. Cause I was just like, what? Like, but that's even, wait. So like, is the transfer portal like a real thing where like you can like log in online and be like, all right, what players are like leaving their schools or like.
I don't know now.
Yeah. No, once you ask for your release, like, unless you already have someone that you've been talking to illegally, because the NCAA don't let you do shit. Like, it's pretty much like free agents. It's like, oh, this person's a free agent. He's leaving.
Yeah.
It's public information.
Especially nowadays.
Okay.
Especially nowadays.
That was my question.
Yeah.
So at LIU, you guys, once again, that was another Monstar squad. You had Jason Breckman, one of the all-time NCAA leading assist guy. You have Julian Boy out of Texas. You have your boy CJ. And y'all managed to rattle off 3 championships. Like, when you sit back and think of those squads, like, what comes to mind?
Man, college in general was just a different time. It was a happier time. I just think perseverance, man. Because a lot of people don't really, you know, you were there. So you saw, you know, you were able to see a lot of things that happened off the court. But, you know, there are so many things unaccounted for in that season. A lot of people just see the 27-6, the 25-8, and the 23-12, you know, and the championship banners. But, man, the things we had to do off the court just made that so much sweeter because it kind of confirmed that, hard work really does, you know, win. Matter of fact, I'm talking to a champion right now. Like, y'all, the track team.
Hype him up. Hype him up.
No, not for real, though. Like, you know, I forgot what, you know, what y'all were doing at the time, you know, and I'm sure you can attest to the fact that, you know, it's sweet on paper, but it's even sweeter when you really get in between the lines. You know, when you're, when you think about the countless hours you spent, you know, running through the sand, or, you know, just starting over because Rich didn't like your form, or like, you know, you get in trouble. So you got, you know, I remember one summer, I mean, not one time, second semester, one of my years, I was running every morning, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, because I came back late from home. And like, I wasn't even considering quitting the transfer because I didn't like that. You know what I mean? I know nobody wants to run that much. Like, I, as a matter of fact, I don't like to run that much. You know what I mean? But, you know, it just meant so much to kind of just see it through, you know? And I don't know. I just think about perseverance, man. And even as senior year, people don't really know. Like, we, you know, we got into some trouble, you know, and we didn't know if we were going to come back to school. Like, we didn't know if we were going to be allowed back into LIU. And we ended up coming back. We got suspended for like 3 NEC games, conference games that were very important that we ended up losing. Mm. You know, we didn't get to finish first this year because we lost 3 off the bat. Me, CJ, Troy, and Julian, we were out. You know what I mean? And to win it as a third seed, you know, I don't know, man, just perseverance, man. That's the word I would use to describe that, you know, those years in my at LIU.
Speaking on your perseverance, 2012, Julian gets hurt. Julian's out. And it's pushed on you to be the leader of the squad. I mean, of course you had your help. Of course you have your teammates. But, like, you stepping up into that role, what was that like?
You know, Julian was always somebody that we can depend on. I mean, he was the player of the year. He was like the lifeblood of the team, if you really look back. You know, he was always the funny guy. And always one, the one who always laughed. We didn't really take things too seriously because at the end of the day, like, you know, to be able to be, you know, in this position that we were, you know, it was a good thing. But, like, so losing him at, I think it was at Rice, he going down with an ACL injury. Huh. Or maybe a game after that, I'm not too sure. You know, I remember, you know, so you know Zaid Hurst. Well, he must be, he's from Maryland, too. He went to Quinnipiac. And I remember he told me when the news went out in the NEC, everybody was like, the coach.
Oh, yeah, they were like.
he had a meeting at Quinnipiac with the team, and he was the coach. Tom Moore was like, the NEC's wide open now. You know, everybody was like, LIU's down, you know, they're down their player of the year. They can't do it again. We had lost 3 games already. Everyone thought the NEC was wide open. And let me tell you something about myself. I went to CJ the next game. I think we played Manhattan. I went to CJ. I went to his room. I couldn't sleep at all because, you know, when you've given so much to the seniors before you to win championships, and now it's your turn for all these things that have been going wrong, I just couldn't let it define my senior year. They got theirs. Our seniors, the seniors before me, got theirs. It was my time to get mine. Like, you know, this is the way I want to go out. I don't want to go out, you know, underachieving, because that's not what I deserve. I gave y'all everything I had, and I'm going to give them everything I had. Mm. So I went to see that. I was like, bro, like, I need you. You know, kind of like, I can't do this on my own. I'm not asking to do this on my own, but I need you. You know, I need you to commit yourself to this team. So, boom, from then on, it was kind of the me, CJ, and Brickman show. We took off, man. And then come championship time, we had beaten Wagner at Wagner by 20. Then we came home for the chip where we belong, because the last 2 years in LIU, we thought we wanted to go on a roll. You know, we came back home, and it was like, I'll never forget my just the way I felt that waking up the night before. I didn't really get much sleep either, and it was like, you know, at that time I had actually just broke the all-time leading score record too. So it was like, there's just no way I can lose this game, you know. And I knew going into that game, I knew everybody was going to be honing on me. I just looked at CJ. I was like, bro, it's your show. I we brought it into the team. Everybody went out there. I held CJ back. I said, bro, it's your show. You carried us this far. Yeah. You know, just take us over the finish line. Bro, I'm here to help, but it's your show.
Yeah.
CJ scored 33 points, bro. 33 points. He went off.
My man, because there used to be like rumors that, like, yo, in the opposing locker room on the whiteboard, be like, yo, number 0 can't shoot. Like, don't fall for any of the big. Like, he's going to have to drive. And CJ was pulling it. He was going to the cup. He was going to the line.
Crazy, bro.
Yeah.
Nah, but what's
crazy?
I was gonna say what's really interesting is what you said before is about how you said you couldn't sleep. And I think that's mad interesting. Somebody like you played basketball for a really long time and you've played in like big games or in big moments before. But like for you to even feel like, all right, like a little bit of nerves before a game lets me know that like you're human. Like you like everybody else. It ain't no different. But like that's really crazy. I would think about all the experience that you've had hooping, like it would just be another game and it'd be nothing to you.
Nah, even today, like we had the game we needed to qualify, man, even going into the playoffs, you know, this year, like I still get nervous, you know what I mean? But that's not the kind of thing that's really going to hold me back. Like, honestly, I think nerves help people, you know, they keep you on your toes. They keep you, you know, you keep your switches going, you know what I mean? Because, you know, you never want to be too relaxed, you know, and it's a fire, man. It's a fire inside. And I know like being nervous kind of ignites that fire for me.
For sure. Damn. I'm sorry, Alistair. You were getting ready to say something, though?
Oh, yeah. I have another LIU question. So, y'all were the only Nike's team. Like, everybody else, you know, you had to wear the Adidas or whatever you were signed to. And, like, I just happened to be in the stands and noticing y'all footwear every single game was that heat. Like, CJ would pull up in the Braves one game. Now he got the cool grade. So, there was, like, a little rumor, like, were y'all getting reimbursed for these shoes?
Nah, man, not at all. But you know, Fulton Street right there, man. Like, you know, and we knew, like, so it wasn't about getting reimbursed, but we knew folks there, like, you know, dudes who worked there. So it's like, it wasn't really too hard to get whatever sneaks you really wanted to get. You know what I mean?
They loved y'all.
Brooklyn was
anytime,
hot.
Anytime we had the warm-ups, they'd be like, yo, y'all play basketball? Nah, I run track. Oh, okay.
Damn.
Nah, the track team got love, man. Hey, look, if you talking to you got a legend on your podcast with him, man. Like the track team to be a part of that. Like even Simon, man, the coach, one of the most beloved people on that campus was his head coach. Like to this day, I love Simon. Simon was the kind of guy that if he saw me in a gym shooting by myself, he would come rebound for me. You know what I mean? Like that's one thing about LIU that people don't really understand. It was so family oriented. Like in that sense where like Simon wasn't just a track coach. I call him coach because he felt like a coach to me. You know what I mean? He was always full of wisdom, always filled with happiness, and he did his job better than anyone else on that campus.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why he always had the results that he had. He always had someone going to nationals. He always had a relay team going somewhere. We were winning championships. And yeah, that's why I
would like that, bro.
Because I wasn't recruited out of high school. As I always say, I was a walk-on. So it was like, yo, he told me straight up. He was like, yo, you compete and you score at conference, I'll give you a scholarship. My first year because I had the greatest high school coach of all time, you know, shouts to Coach Sims. yeah, I didn't get the clearinghouse speech that everyone else got. So I was ineligible. So I had to sit out a year. So now I came back. So I came back with Brendan and JoJo and all them. And I was just like, yo, I got to compete with these dudes. I'm going to get a scholarship. I don't care. So,
yeah.
And then I think the first year we fell short. And then after that, it was like championship, 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 regionals, nationals.
The crazy part is I don't even remember y'all ever falling short. Like all I ever remember was every year that I've been at LIU, the track team won.
With the NEC banner. Yeah.
Yeah, literally, like always bringing home trophies, always bringing home the most outstanding, this the best, you know, just the track team was the track team, man.
Yeah, you squatted. But like speaking on what you said about the family aspect, like we were always supporting each other. Like we were going to basketball games. They even showed up at the Armory at track meets. The volleyball girls were always good people. It's like,
man, yeah,
definitely family. Yeah.
Soccer team too, man. TJ, the head coach of that, man. TJ was another coach that, you know, would help me rebound from time to time and, you know, help me with certain classes. Man, that man, LIU was great for that. Like, I don't know how much I support LIU now. Like, no shade to that.
Man,
I just don't really like
the Roger Sharks ball now. Nah.
Yeah. But I'm forever a Blackbird, man, forever. Like, that always is embedded in my heart for the things that, you know, I was able to accomplish over there.
Damn. Well, so to kind of follow it up, we're currently in March Madness, right? And so one of the things that you got to do while you were at LIU was participate in the probably one of the biggest television broadcast that goes on for a month, which is, you know, the March Madness tournament. Talk a little bit about that. What was that? What was that like? Did they give you a bunch of free shit? Did they like, was there people running up on you like, oh my God, Jamal, you're in the tournament. Like, sign my tits. Like, what was that like?
No, I mean, it was my first year was, you know, that's every college hooper's dream. Like everybody wants to go to March Madness, you know, and I think we were in North Carolina the first year. And it was first of all, it was amazing to, you know, hear your name called out as a 15th seed. You know what I mean? Like we weren't even a playing game that year. We were a 15th seed. And then there are rumors talking about they matched up because there are politics behind the matchups. Like these aren't random. You know what I mean? So there was rumors they wanted, they matched up with UNC because they knew that we were such a high octane type offense and they were as well. And I don't know if you were able to catch the game, but as you can see, like we scored in the 90s with a team that had Harrison Barnes, that had John Henson, and that had
Kendall Marshall.
Kendall Marshall, Tyler Zell. Like you talking about all pros? They had four pros on that team. You know, Dexter Strickland was no far from any of them as well. It was a starting two guard. So you know, it was just great to be able to experience that. It was surreal at the time. You know, family. Everybody's calling me. Yo, can I get a ticket? Can I get a ticket? We gonna drive to North Carolina. You know, North Carolina not about just about six, not 7 hours far away. So yeah, you know what I mean. So people hopped in the car and they drove down and to come see me play. You know, it was just cool to be able to be on a court with that kind of talent with Roy Williams. You're talking about, you know, a Hall of Fame coach.
Coach,
you know, even after that game, he came up to me and was like, man, hell of a player, man. I love your game. I knew you were going to be a trouble from film. And you showed that then. It was like, did Roy Williams just you know, just say that? You know what I mean? But honestly, man, you know, it was amazing. We didn't get a chartered plane that year, but my junior year and my senior year, we got a chartered plane to Ohio both years. And that speaks for itself. Anybody, you know, I still have the picture. You know, I was in my lime green phone posits, you know, real DMV type dude, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He kicked up on a chartered plane. You know, it was just like, you know, it was crazy, you know, it was enjoyable, man. You know, you enjoyed every second of it, man.
Nah, that's crazy. That's crazy. I can only imagine what it's like going to like a North Carolina and going to the tournament. I mean, I know it's expected and it's regular, but like in comparison, like you went to LIU, not saying like LIU is like small potatoes or whatever, but y'all are a D1 program and you get to get on a chartered plane. Like, I don't know, man. I know all your relatives in Africa were proud. They were like, ah, Jamal, well done. You're doing well.
Hey, the first time I ever ate at like an expensive restaurant, because, you know, again, I'm a young boy, I'm a sophomore, but 19. We went to Del Frisco's that day. The first time I ever tried calamari, they went crazy. Damn. Like, you know, obviously it wasn't on the LIU program anymore. NCAA was paying for everything. So we eat fancy. We get a private room. I'm over here like, you know, I did not know this kind of world existed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's the kind of life, you know, it was to really make it to, you know, March Madness.
Damn. Nah, that's what's up.
So you spoke on your lime green phone posits. Something that I definitely, I'm not gonna say struggle with, but like it was definitely an adjustment period. Like transitioning your high school fashion and high school wear to living in New York.
Talk about this all the time.
Like, so when you go to New York, they're rocking the I got the foxtail keychain off the belt loop. I got the Alexander McQueen sneakers. It's like. So what was that adjustment like for you?
Well, bro, you know, nothing, you know, a lot of, for like Maryland, we don't really, I took it personal. I didn't want to change for nobody. I wasn't going to come in there and conform to no NYC, Brooklyn type style. You know what I mean? So I came in there with my phone. I had the pearls. I had the lime greens. I had the pines. I had the eggplants, you know what I mean? And I wore them proudly. You know what I mean? Like I you know, I wasn't going to hide, you know, or try and change for nobody. I want everybody to know, like, I'm from Maryland and we wear phone posits. We wear New Balances, 992s. So that's how I came in, you feel me? But, you know, it was strange seeing them wear whatever they was wearing back then. Man, honestly, my freshman year, whatever Jake Toner was wearing, it was garbage. I'll tell you that. It was garbage, you know? So, you know, they love their fitteds all big. And I'm just like, man, I couldn't. Fitted over the ears. I don't know what they were going to
say. Fitteds over the ears.
Nah, for real, big fitteds over the ears, the brim. Look, I take an hour to talk about how they dress over there, man.
Nah, that's wild. Well, I mean, again, speaking of transition, so I mean, you got the opportunity to, you know, you went from Springbrook, you go to LIU, you guys develop a championship type of program, basically. You get to play against like these high profile schools in like North Carolina. You talk to Roy Williams. After your basketball career at LIU, were you like, all right, like, cool, like next step, obviously I got to work on getting to like the NBA or something like that. What was like, what was the I guess the moment where you were like, all right, here's what I got to do next?
Well, after the, we played James Madison, the playing game, my senior year, we ended up losing. I locked in right after that. You know, it was a lot of like chatter here and there. You know, agents used to hit you up throughout the year, whether it was on Facebook, whether it was on IG, even IG wasn't that popping at the time. But Twitter, whatever it was, you know, you had a lot of agents on your line. So right then and there, and I had got invited to Portsmouth. It's like a senior invitational camp. You know, you had all the NBA scouts there. You had agents from all over the world coming over to see 60 seniors play and compete. You know what I mean? So right after that, I had to transition straight into pro mode. You know what I mean? So I remember I had chose my agent at the time, which was Sean Kennedy at Excel Sports over in New York. And he got me with a pro trainer, Ross Burns in New York. I used to work out at this fancy club in New York. Like, I would take the train right after class. To be honest, I didn't really go to too much class after the championship.
I wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't have either.
Yeah.
And honestly, I gotta say,
you know, school wasn't why I was here. And I'm here because of basketball. And at that time, I needed to put everything I had into becoming a pro. So I was working out about 3 times a day, man. Whenever I can get in the gym, I was in there. You know what I mean? I was at my best, you know, physically right after the season. You know what I mean? At that time, I had worked out with, I had a couple pro workouts with the Celtics, the Knicks, the Nets, and the fourth team. So Celtics, Knicks, Nets, Philly, and D.C., you know. So I was locked in that, too. Like, you know, you talking about, you know, a kid from Montgomery County who gets to, you know, go to an NBA workout. That's nothing, you know, everybody looks forward to. You know, you hear about NBA workouts, you know, I was able to do that. You know, so that's what I was worried about after that. And I was just locked in. You know, I had just actually gotten contact with the Nigerian national team as well. And they were competing in the AfroBasket. So that summer, I didn't even really have to myself. So I'm going from pro workout to pro workout, you know, in the gym, out the gym. Then I had to go to Florida for training camp with the national team, where now I'm on a national team with Al-Farouq Aminu, Ike Diagu, so many different, you know, pro athletes, at, not just in the NBA, but you're talking about Ben Uzo, who was also in the NBA, but at the Europe level. Like, you're talking about EuroLeague-type players, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Tell Giannis to come home, man. Tell Giannis to come home.
I don't know what's up with that boy, man. I don't know why he didn't get Greece. His blood is Nigerian, but we don't really got to get
you know, man. That, but come on,
I don't know
dog. What's
up with him and Vic. Sometimes they kind of
yeah, bro. Yeah, be playing,
you know. But I'm telling you, but you know, I'm going to the national team now, and now I'm learning on a whole new different level because now I'm with people who've done it, people who can kind of map it out for me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we go to the Ivory Coast, and you can imagine being able to compete with your, you know, the blood, like, you know, we're talking about Nigeria here. This is the blood that runs through my veins. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, the pride that went into all of that was unbelievable. You know what I mean? And that's when they had called me and told me that one of the top teams in Italy, this is now the top league in Italy. And at the time, they don't really sign rookies. And they had told me the team name was, it was Cantu. Two teams, Cantu and Cremona. They wanted me to decide. And I had chose Cremona when I was in the Ivory Coast. And, yeah, and most people don't really know this about me, but my first year when I went to Cremona, I was diagnosed with a heart ailment. They thought I had HCM, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So I didn't get to compete that whole year. They actually had told me that I was supposed to stop playing basketball for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? So people don't really know that. Yeah. So that whole year, from after my senior year, I'm home back and forth between New York and Maryland, going back and forth to doctors, trying to figure out what's going on with me. Because again, you got to imagine, through all the success that I've had through basketball, I've never in my life ever heard that, you know, I had something wrong with my heart. And to tell me that I couldn't, now I got a phone call from a doctor. My mom is on the phone with the doctor trying to get my results. The doctor's telling my mom, he's 18. You can't. Oh, he's, well, obviously I'm over 20. I've been 18, but I can't tell you my information, like HIPAA, you know, HIPAA laws and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom got me on the phone and was like, well, he's on the phone now. She put me on three-way with the doctor, mind you. Oh, I'm taking my then-girlfriend to work at the time in New York. And he tells me, so I said, what's going on, doc? He's like, well, I want my higher-ups to look at it first before I, you know, come to any conclusion. And, you know, at that point, I'm like, that's shit. Never good news.
Yeah.
Right. So we're in the middle of the street in a car. It's a green light. And I'm like, just what would be your diagnosis? He's like, well, I would tell you never to play basketball ever again. He told me straight like that. Just like that. You should never, if it was up to me, you should never play basketball ever again. And I was just like, excuse me? Like, what do you mean? Like, I've been doing this all my, this is what I know. This
I've
is
been fine, crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, like this has been number one. This has been the number one thing in my life up until now. And it's time to make money. And you telling me that I shouldn't play this game no more? Are you crazy? I said, like, this man, like, are you crazy, doc?
Yeah.
He was like, let's not rush to any conclusions. He's coming on Monday. Mine is a Friday. Let's coming on Monday, and we'll talk it out.
You was on eggshells that whole weekend.
Man, what? I'm in New York. I can't do anything else, but I'm trying to fast forward time. I'm trying to get in contact with Dr. Strange to see if he can do something. You know, like, nah, these are thoughts that's going between my head, but like, you know. And I went to the doctor on that Monday, and I'll never forget. I was, you know, bumping gospel. I'm like, you know, everything gonna be okay. You know, I'm singing along. You know, I'm up there shouting. You would think I was going crazy in that car, but I was 5 minutes away, and I just busted out in tears because I just knew something was wrong. Something wasn't gonna go my way. And we got to the office, me and my agent, and the doctor said, "Yeah," he was like, and at the time, I was like, notorious doctors who I guess specialized in cardiology. He didn't really even give my case two looks. You know what I mean? He looked at me. It was like one of those, okay. Yeah, you have HCM. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? He says, well, this part of your heart is too big and you shouldn't play basketball anymore. And I'm like, I'm just sitting in the chair stuck while my agent's over there taking notes. And I'm just like, I'm trying to figure out what's next. Like, you got to imagine, like, I didn't have a plan B. Like, I'm not, you know, I didn't know what to do. You know, part of me fell into like, I don't really like to admit it, you know, but I was depressed. You know, you got to imagine, you know, as much success as basketball has brought me, mm-hmm. it just wasn't fair. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't fair. That's how I felt. So we're talking about a whole 2013 where I'm sitting on a couch. I am like, I'm 6'6", 225 pounds, and I'm working at a front desk in a doctor's office. You know what I mean? Like, that don't make no sense. Everybody would come in like, you're too big to be working here.
What are you doing here?
Exactly. Right. You know what I mean? But people don't know that year changed me. Like, it humbled me, man. It brought me closer to God, man. It was honestly probably what I needed. You know what I mean? Like, I remember like, when people had heard from school what was going on, Kenny Onyechi, that was another player that we didn't get to mention on that championship team that, you know, just speaks volumes about what we were able to do there. But he was just like, man, this is God telling you, you just need a break. You know what I mean? I put so much, like, you know, you put the team on your shoulders for so long. You just need to relax, take some time. And, you know, at that time, I wasn't trying to hear none of that, man. It was time to make money. And I needed to do that. Like, basketball was, that's at the end of the day, like, I love the game, but we all know we do this because we want to be able to provide. Mm. And to exactly, we want to live that lifestyle, you know, that comes with being a pro athlete. And I was kind of being denied that, you know, and it was hard, man. But by November that year, you know, they were the doctor had called me back in. There was a specialist that came over from the Netherlands, and he specialized in the heart and he specialized in HCM. And he was like, you know, they called me, said, come up to New York, we want you to talk to this doctor because my case was special. Doctor came in, and mind you, this time I was transitioning in terms of my faith. I was giving everything to God. Like, everything was kind of, I was kind of letting everything go, you know. And then I got that call, and I'm like, I don't want to kind of spiral again. So I was really hesitant to go up there, but my spirit told me, like, just go hear what he has to say. So me and my mother went. Doctor was like, I don't know what that doctor told you before, but this is no definitive proof of HCM, and we would love to run more tests if you would have time.
Yes, sir. Nigga said that nigga was stupid. He didn't know what he was talking about, my G.
Man,
I got you.
Man, bro, I dropped to my knees. I gave thanks. And at that time, it was like, pour everything into this faith, because clearly faith works. You know, as an African, and a Nigerian, you know, I lived in a household where Christianity was all around you to the point where it was kind of like, oh yeah, you know, it was kind of like taken for granted. You know what I mean?
Right.
I would say, I would say like, you know, thank you, God, or like, but it wasn't genuine. You feel me?
Because everything at that point was so sweet.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Everything was so sweet at the time that, you know, you could just say it and go about your life because everything's going to continue to be sweet. You know, this is my first time where I ever had trials and tribulation, you know, and when I saw the product of my faith working, oh boy, I started offering like I never offered before. You know what I mean? Like I was giving everything into it, you know, because I wanted this back. I wanted, because I was promised the fruits of my labor. You know what I mean? And I wanted that, you know, but I needed to get right on this side before I get right on this side. And ever since that year, I was cleared in July of 2014 to play basketball competitively. And ever since that, you know, everything's been good, man. Everything's been, you know, that's why I give it all to God, man. You know, I wouldn't be here without him.
So I got to ask you, especially with, you know, being like a black or like African-American, I think a lot of us like be like afraid to like go to the doctor, like if we find like something's wrong. But like what prompted you or what even got you to the point to figure out that there was like potentially something that was going on with like your heart?
So when I was in Cremona, man, like, they do physicals, you know, they do physicals in college, but it's nothing. It's not as extensive as it is in a professional realm. So when I got over there, they had me like doing, you know, that's when they connect all the things to your chest. You're on a bike, then you're running, you know, they're doing like, so that's the usual. Like, so when they did that test, they realized that my numbers were off and my EKG was off. So they were like, okay, we need to do more tests. So that's when they connected me to a heart monitor. They did, they're doing breathing tests. They put me back on the bike, but I had like this tube in my mouth where I had to breathe in a certain kind of oxygen, you know, and then each test led to another test, which led to another test, led to them saying like, okay, well, to an MRI, which kind of was their thing. They were like, well, there's something going on here that life-threatening that we need you to figure out before we can sign you. So that's when they sent me home. And at that point, I was like, man, they're trying to just get rid of me. Like, they don't want me here, whatever it was. Then it all didn't become real until, because at that time, so when I went to the doctor in New York, they were like, if you can get the doctor in New York to clear you, we'll bring you back and we'll the contract will be valid. That's when I went to New York and I went through all the tests. And I'm thinking like, it's just another run of the mill kind of thing. Like, cool, doctors don't clear me and I'm going back. And as I, you know, explained before, that wasn't the case. And that's the only reason why, you know, the whole doctor's thing came up. Because before that, you know, I would go to a regular cardiologist, but he would just say, you know, you have an abnormal EKG, which is fine. When you talk about people of African descent or even Caribbean descent, it's natural or normal to have an EKG that, you know, abnormal. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know why, but that's just what we are. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's our build. So that's what prompted all the doctors.
Nah, like I said, he said we're better athletes. That's why.
That's real though.
That definitely plays a factor into it. Because like I said, something similar like that happened to me too, where I was like, all right, I had an EKG and they were just like, yeah, this is like abnormal. We can't read this. We need you to like do some additional testing and all that. But that's amazing that like it managed to work out for you. Cause like, there's like stories of people who have like heart problems and like they are on the court and they just like kind of pass out and drop dead, like literally in the middle of like them working out or whatever they're doing. So
yeah,
definitely like it worked out in the long run for you, and you're pretty blessed and fortunate. From there, you know, you get clear, you're back and you can play. What was it like transitioning into like being like a pro basketball player?
Well, I came back with a vengeance, man. I'm telling you, like, as soon as I got cleared, man, the first thing I did, I went from the doctors to the court. Like, I didn't even take time to go home first. You know what I mean? Like, that's how serious it was for me. Like, it was like,
yeah,
I needed to get back physically, because you're talking about now, I was 225, 6'6", 6% body fat. I was like 255 for that whole year. Like, I fell off. You know what I mean? So it was just kind of like, it was difficult because my body wasn't kind of in go mode anymore. You know, I was in, you know, whatever I was doing at that doctor's office mode, you know, so I need to kind of get back into it. So I didn't know. So when anybody hears heart problem or heart situation overseas, it's kind of a red flag, you know? So I was kind of scared in terms of what I could do job wise or where I could get. So I got to Belgium, and then the whole same thing happened. The same thing in Italy happened when I got to Belgium. But luckily, my doctor, so I had collaborated doctors from home, I went to Johns Hopkins. They had an HCM center specifically for what was going on with me to clear me of all of that, you know. So, and you know, Johns Hopkins is Johns Hopkins. So they collaborated and they came to the conclusion that, you know, that he can compete. And then from there, everything changed. Like, how can I explain that first year in Belgium? You know, I was still in college mode. Like, I didn't understand the pro game compared to the college game is 100% different. A lot of people can make the leap easily. You know, you're special when you can do something like that. But those who can't, you have to work. Work in a different way, though. It's not working at 100% speed, 100% like, you know, physicality. No, the pro game is more so kind of breaking it down into days, into weeks, into what you need to hone in on. Like, I came over there faster than everybody, stronger than everybody, and I thought that was going to take me over the home. No, what teams started doing was sagging off me because I didn't settle because I didn't need to shoot. You know, now when you talk about scouting at a different level, Jamal wasn't as weaponized as he was in college anymore because they've taken what he can do away from him. And you're talking about a more physical game. So now I'll never forget the day my coach decided to bring everybody in and he called me out. He said, Jamal, he was like, you're a rookie and you're not working like you're a pro. You're working as if, you know, the game was given to you kind of thing. And I took that personal. I started running after practice. Like at the time, my ex-girlfriend, she had lived with me in Belgium. And I started like running after practice. Like what I mean, like I would run around the neighborhood. I would get to practice early. I'm taking 50 shots before, 200 shots after kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like trying to really get to where I really needed to be physically. And, you know, with my jump shot, and halfway through the season, everything changed. Like, my stats changed. Like, I was averaging, like, 8 points in the beginning. They actually wanted to cut me. But after that, I started averaging about 13, 14, moving to the starting lineup, and everything took off. And then that's when I learned the pro game. That's when I learned how to kind of take myself to the next level. And then after Belgium, I went to Italy, Italy to Israel, then Israel back to Italy, and ever since I've been here.
Damn. Yeah. Damn. That's lit, bro.
Best place you played, like in terms of a crowd.
Oh, say that again, I hear you.
Where's the best pro and like crowd environment that you played in?
Oh, Rieti, man, Rieti. When I was in Italy, I was 26. That was the year I played with Zaid overseas. We played in Rieti together. So the same guy I played with in high school, and I played against him in college. We ended up playing together as a pro, which was actually really like amazing. But that crowd was relentless, man. You talk about a crowd that filled up the stand every home. Like, nobody wanted to come and play us at home because they knew that the crowd was that intense. You know what I mean? I'm talking about a crowd that would throw things at you. Some people would leave saying, oh, somebody from the crowd spit on me. Like, that's the kind of energy they gave every home game, man. So Rieti was hands down probably the crowd-wise the best place I played.
So I got to ask you about, and this is something that I noticed because I had a cousin who played soccer overseas, Joe Jow, who played in Germany for a little while. But one of the things he always talked about was like kind of race relations in terms of like being black in like these like European countries. Like, what's your experience been like from that perspective? Has it been like a pretty smooth transition, or has there been like moments where it was kind of like, damn, these niggas is racist. Like, I can't fuck with it.
No, I've never really ran into too much trouble with stuff like that. I mean, you know, you get your looks. Like, when you walk outside, being 6'6", anywhere in black in a country that's mostly white, like, you know, all they do is stare. Like, sometimes I get annoyed with the staring, and I'll stare. Like, they stare at me, I'd be like, you know what I mean? Like, just to get them off my back. But there's been one time we had, like, a friendly game against a team, and me and one of the Italian point guards on the other team got into it. And he had like called me a monkey or something like that, you know. And you don't really need to ask me how I reacted after that. Right, like, the game was over for me. You know, at that point, I wanted to put him on his back, you know, in any way possible. So needless to say, I fouled out, putting him on his back. And after that, it was a big exchange afterwards. You know, I got ejected and I tried to get him in the locker room because, you know, stuff like that, that's never really, I've never really experienced that. And, you know, that's not basketball to me. You don't need to be like that. And if you're going to be like that, you understand the repercussions that could happen after, and that's you getting hurt. You know what I mean? So, you know, that was the only time I really, you know, experienced anything like that. But other than that, man, everybody I've ever played with has always been cool. You know, we hang out off the court. You know, we go out, we drink, we have fun.
Okay. Damn. Is it, I got to also ask though, like in terms of like your extracurricular activities off the court, like your nightlife or like your life in general that you live outside of basketball, like, do you feel like you have the same level of like fun or like comfortability overseas that you do when you're home? Or is it just like you're making do because of like where you're at and like you find things that work?
Oh, nah, I ain't no make it do. One of the people don't understand fun until you come to cities like Rome or Milan. Man, when I tell you Milan is probably my favorite city in the world, and I've been to a lot of different cities. You know, even at home, like LA, you know, it's fun. Miami's fun. Houston is, it can get crazy too. But you talk about somewhere like Milan as a 26-year-old black man, you know, it's, oh my God, man, it's incredible. Bro. I swear to God, man, that nightlife in Milan is crazy, man. Like even in Israel, when I was in Tel Aviv as well, man, the night, like when I was in Tel Aviv, I was young, I was single. I would go out every single night. I'm talking about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I'm talking all hip hop, not no techno, not all hip hop music. You know, you can find a different club on any night. And that's how Tel Aviv was. That's how Milan is. Every Sunday night in Milan, man, it can get crazy. Now, like my life has calmed down so much now. You know, I live with my girlfriend now and I have my son. Yeah. But those days where you could go out and have fun, man, those nights, unforgettable. I really have unforgettable nights going out in Milan and in Rome and Tel Aviv and all that. So,
damn,
even when I was in Rome the first time, we were the only team in Rome at the time. So I was the only black guy.
You could say it. I'm about to say.
The only black guy on the team. So when you go out, like, you know what I mean? Like, I just say they love black guys.
Right.
You know, so it was like, it was great, man. It was amazing, bro. It was amazing.
So do you see yourself staying stationed, I guess, overseas or like, because, I mean, obviously, like you said, you have your son now, you're raising your son. Are you only there, I guess, in terms of, you know, playing for your professional career? Do you see yourself coming back to like the States and like, I don't know, like doing basketball camps? I don't know what people do after they're done playing, but like.
Well, you know, ever since, you know, now you, when you have a child, man, you got to think, now I'm thinking 5 to 10 years ahead of time. You know what I mean? So like, as of now, this is the way I make my money. You know what I mean? I don't know. Physically, honestly, I've been through 2 knee surgeries. I've been through that whole heart thing. Honestly, I don't know how many years I have left. But I will continue to play as long as I need to. But, you know, I am thinking about the next 5 years. I am thinking about what I'll be doing. I have a couple of things that works. Me and my close friend, like a brother, Jeremy Williams now, he plays professionally overseas too. But we're working on this thing called Life Through Hoops. You know, it's kind of it started off as a training kind of thing, but now we want to expand into mentoring, expand into just, you know, that big brother aspect that not a lot of people got growing up. Because I wish I did have somebody like me who could sit me down and tell me, you know, what is out there for me, like the life that I can experience if I go down the right kind of path. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was lucky and fortunate enough to get to the level I am now without the big brother and the help that I needed. You know what I mean? Like, especially in the Nigerian household, we're here with it. You know what I mean? And there's a world out there that people need to know. You know what I mean? You don't need to just be, it's not just all about school. Now school is very important, but you need to be prepared for things that outside of school, outside of basketball, that could hinder you. You know what I mean? So that, you know, that's what we're kind of trying to build as well as pro training. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going to, we've been working on. Obviously with COVID, it's been impossible to get into gyms and train people. So, yeah. You know, with the pandemic being over soon, you know, we're going to focus more on that. And even on the business side of things, there's so many other things we have in the works that we really can't speak about. But, you know, I am thinking 5 years in advance, you know, because I got to provide at this point, like, you know, as a man, as a father, you got to provide for your family.
Yeah, hopefully that the NBA ticket works out for you with Lil Man, and he's
in 18 years, I have my retirement plan is 18 years from now, so don't you worry. I'm kicking my feet up very, very soon, man. I'm pouring everything I can into that kid.
That's what's up. But nah, man, for the most part, I don't know if anybody else has ever heard, like, you know, your story and like the things that you've gone over. But I think the people who are going to listen to this are going to be like, damn, I know a lot more about Jamal now than I knew before. Because, like, for example, I've only seen you like on the court play basketball, and I've never like had an interaction with you or talked to you. But hey, man, you're a solid dude. Besides the fact that you're Nigerian and even thieving, I mean, but other than that, like, you cool.
Nah, I appreciate that. Yeah, and honestly, I don't really tell that story a lot. But man, like, people need to know, like, and I don't really see myself. I don't really look in the mirror and see this Jamal that people see. Like, for me, I'm human. Like, I have fun. I crack jokes. You know what I mean? Like, it's actually kind of humbling, or, you know, it makes me feel good, you know, that people can see me in that light, but it also makes me feel better that people can know that I'm human too, that I hurt the same way, that I've been through the same trials and tribulations as everyone else. And I'm still going through, you know, having a child ain't easy. So anybody out there who wants to have children, think twice before you have a child, because they
tell
are
them again.
Not, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's a real life commitment that I'm learning each and every single day. Like, you know, watching them grow up, like it's great to see. You know, the process is hard, but I'm enjoying it, man. But like, yeah, like you said, like, I'm human, man. Like, I go through everything the same way as everyone else, and I experience the same things as everyone else.
Yeah, for sure.
I got one question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Outside of yourself, who's the best hooper in the Willows?
Ooh, man.
Ooh, that's tough, man. Because we have some ball players, man. I think Jeremy would be mad if I didn't say him, so I'm going to go ahead and say Jeremy Williams.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay. No, that's what's up. I mean, I can't deny. Like, even like as a young kid, everybody, like, that's one thing. Like, cause you know, we went to school with like Brandon Headley and like a few other
people.
But one thing he always would tell niggas, he was like, man, can't nobody hoop with the Willows. And I'd be like, well, why not? Like, why y'all think y'all so good? You know what I'm saying? But like, I feel like for a lot of, I guess, people associated with that neighborhood, like, basketball's always been like, from like real small, basketball's been like a thing.
From the OGs. OGs like, to the young boys now, man. Like, the Willows, man, we produced them, like, and even B-Head. Like, I was going to say B-Head, too, because that boy was a sharpshooter in high school. But, I'm going to go ahead and keep it. And even Ryan. Ryan was pretty good, too. But I'm going to go ahead and keep it with Jeremy.
Nah, respect. Hopefully, man, you know, I know that people be doing, like, open runs at courts, or they do, like, King of the Courts in different tournaments. I know my man Jay Black does the All-In Summer Tour, so I don't know if you're going to come out of retirement for the street hoops one time. We're going to see you out there, you know, to let people know what it is.
He's been asking me, but I don't know, man. Like, when you
got a professional career, though. You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah, it's a little different, man, especially with the summertime, you know. The summertime nowadays is like spending most of my time with my family, because in the season, my time ain't really that much available. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe for the right price. I told him, if somebody won't come out there and put up some real bread to play me one-on-one, then that's fine. But
you heard it here on the A&B podcast. If somebody want to put up some real bread to see Jamal, make sure the numbers is correct, and he'll step out there and take your bread.
Yeah, I'll come out there, man.
Yeah, nah, because we might need you, because last summer – they was getting Moco out of the way, and I was like, damn, why ain't none of the real hoopers here? Like, what the?
Yeah.
I mean, they probably hooping because hooping is their job if they're the real hoopers.
It,
so.
it gotta be for the right price to bring the right ones out, you know what I mean?
No, respect. Well, without further ado, Alistair, can you hold us down with the this or that?
Absolutely. It's a bunch of random questions. All you have to do is say this or that. You're not ready for them. You don't know what they're going to be. Are you ready?
I mean, apparently not, because you just said we won't be, but go ahead.
Exactly. All right, first question. Better player, De'Aaron Fox or Ja Morant?
It's a tough question, man. I'm going to say De'Aaron Fox right now.
And Ja Morant.
Ja Morant.
Ja Morant. Yeah.
Better college phenomenon. Jimmer Fredette or J.J. Redick?
J.J. Redick. That's tough. That's tough, but like, man.
Jimmer!
He's some good
Jimmer,
questions.
It's because of where Jimmer was pulling up from, but J.J. Redick was almost putting up 30 points. I mean, so same right, with Jimmer, but he did it at Duke, you know?
I'm going to go J.J. I'm going to go J.J., but sheesh, that's not a good question.
Yeah, that's a tough one, though.
Would you rather get paid in pennies or live with no electricity?
Like, am I getting, like, a good amount of money? It's just in pennies? Or
would
like
you get paid right now in pennies?
Damn, that's an inconvenience though, bro. But not having electricity.
That is.
Like, give me Peyton pennies, bro. Peyton pennies, bro.
I need the bread. I like some candles.
Yeah.
Low tops or high tops for hoop and shoes?
No tops.
Low tops, because the KD4s are the best hoop shoes ever.
The Galaxy one?
Yeah. With the strap that come across like the front. Yeah.
Those are pretty ones.
Top notch, bro.
Chris Brown or Usher?
God, these are some great questions, man.
It's almost like that WizKid Burna Boy question. It's like, bro, we don't get Breezy if Usher don't do what Usher do. So yeah. I'm gonna say Usher for right now, but it might change. It might change when you post it on the timeline. But yeah, you got to go with Usher. Man. He gave us confessions, bro, and Let It Burn.
Chris Brown not really competing with nobody, man. Usher had to compete with so many different talents, man. I'm gonna go Usher.
Yeah. Okay. And last one, better mixtape, Rich Forever or Barter 6?
Rich Forever.
Rich Forever, bro. And I'm a big Thug fan, but like the way that Rick Ross, the way that whole album make you feel, bro.
That Rich Forever was like not coming out because he had other albums. Like I love Ross, but that was his one that kind of put him on a map. Like, you know, people, I remember when that Rich Forever did come out and we downloaded it and we was on the school bus. I mean, going to a game, man. At that point, it was like, oh, Ross is here. Mm-hmm. So I'm going Rich Forever.
Yeah, not for sure. Well, yeah, man. Alistair, thank you for holding us down with This or That. Before we wrap up, Jamal, is there anything that you want to leave the people with? If you want to shout anybody out? If you want to do your social media, any of that?
No, I'll just shout out the Willows real quick, man. You know, those are always good people. And I always, you know, I'll leave off with just saying, God, man, like that right there, him right here is just the reason why I'm living the life I'm living. I give everything to him. And as you guys can see with the stuff that I've went through personally, you know, how can I give it to him? You know what I mean? Like, and if anybody's ever having trouble or needed a testimony, and you heard it right here, you know, I gave my testimony. Y'all heard it right here. And, you know, just believe and just, you know, put all your faith into anything you want to do.
Real spill. Appreciate that. Alistair, man, you want to leave the people with anything? Maybe your stairs to greatness for this week.
Absolutely. This week's stairs to greatness, people liking you, believing you, and supporting you isn't a given. It's a bonus. The real goal is liking yourself. You can follow me on Instagram, Stairs to Greatness. Make sure you follow our podcast page, AMB period podcast. I'm about to give a little more content from the cipher that we were just at. So keep a lookout for that on the timeline. Shouts to _DreWave. I see you doing your thing out there in the. And shouts to Steve for putting on a great show. Bryce said it at the top of the episode, but I got to give you another shout out because that was really dope. I've also been saying, everybody in the area, we got too much talent down here. We got to work together to make it out.
All right.
So I'm going to throw it to you, co-host.
Appreciate that. As always, man, I don't have anything profound to say. Hey, man, just, you know, it's about to be a hot summer. Get your vaccines ready. You know what I mean? The sundresses is going to be out. Yeah, man, we saw a preview yesterday what DC is going to look like again. So life is coming back to normal.
It was outside.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday, man, I saw him on my feed. Yeah.
Nah, he was definitely outside, man. Drunk. Walking the streets, bro. It was almost kind of beautiful to see, because like I said, we haven't been like that in a little while. But yeah, it's gonna get a little wild. So, you know, everybody just make sure you're safe and you do your vaccine thing if you can.
Even if you don't wear it, just bring it, you know.
Yeah. And you can follow me on social media, on Twitter, Young Tamarack, YoungTamarack, and on Instagram, Kofi Bryce _KofiBryce_. And man, wow. You know what I just realized? I did not think about the song that's going to play on the podcast this week. I'm lacking. But
we
play music from, you said what?
The new Nate.
Did it drop already?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you'll hear some new music from Nate Joel on this week of the A&B podcast. So thank y'all for listening. We appreciate it. Peace.
We out.
All right.
Yeah. If the wind goes. Yeah.
No ghost stories, nothing moves without my touch. They've been looking tired, I can tell when her time's up. That little baby popping, she can always get flown through. My family tree is standing, we've been growing out more roots. They heard that I record, then they get reconnected. I made my own brothers I can step with. Never on this journey did I look for exits, focused on protecting rep. I just never miss, and everybody show respect. I've seen what being patient gets, all my motives still in motion. I changed the narrative and made the notion that success the only way that we coping. My father focused on his lotto dreams. She graduated with degrees, more interested in the model scene. We all got a path to follow. I be drinking over half the bottle. All the verses getting written like novels. Turn the page on bad traditions. I was molded under bad conditions. Still never slipping on my position. I've been feeling automatic. I be in shock if rappers want it static. Know they wanna get it the way I have it. She like my tone and how I said it too. I can never leave us tied. I have to let it loose. Losing yourself, an easy way to fall. I know enough to know I'll never know it all. I report on what I saw. This is live from all of the thoughts in my head. I got a reason for my action and things that I said. This is the mark of a beast. I stop getting my sleep. She like coming around me, and for mine it ain't ease. I break bread like it's a last supper. Right now I gotta look past all of my past lovers. God is how I stay covered. Ooh,
I don't think I would be here without you.
I roll the dice without casino spending. I feel I got a lot of payments pending. Shots sending, never been my cup of tea. Could never change on her, she be changing me. Times I like to play the villain, show them what they hate to see. Brace yourself for broken promises and lack of action. A lot of hunger in the way we rapping. Used to scribble on a napkin. Don't avoid the pressure, I embrace it. A lot of people turn their back and show me what I'm faced with. I've seen things they said a young boy shouldn't have. I'm at peace with my decisions, whether good or bad. Only trust my vision, I don't look into the optics. I've seen a lot of splits, went too focused on the profit.
Eu escolho a vida que quero, mas às vezes ela vem com surpresas, vem com despesas, vem sem tempo de nos preparar. Se lembre que tudo o que vem, o teu passado já te preparou. I could be wrong, I heard Monica save your life, but I see people die so many times, why they still alive, chasing things instead of breathing life. Only love, not only money, you don't owe me nothing, no. You don't owe me nothing, but love, yeah. You don't owe me nothing but love.